This podcast on WSIU.org is a member-supported service of WSIU Public Radio. Your contributions help provide WSIU's online programming. Call 800-745-9748 or give online at WSIU.org. And thanks.
We've had a few days since the Illinois legislature wrapped its spring session for 2012, and still the dust is settling. Things are still unknown in some cases. We thought we'd get a bit of a wrap-up and analysis with Paul Simon Public Policy Institute Director David Yepsen. David, thanks for coming in this morning.
It's good to be with you.
As we said, we're not sure about some of the things that are kind of still up in the air in Springfield, but we know that there is a budget. We know that there are Medicaid reforms that have been put in place. A gambling expansion package has been sent to the governor. If you had to put an overall grade on the legislature for the spring, how do you think that they did?
I actually think they did better than they have in recent years. They're making some progress. They have had to make tough decisions. The state is broke. It does not have the money to spend that it has been spending, and so tough choices have to be made. And they passed a budget. The figure of 6% cuts to things like education thrown about, that's going to be tough. So it's hard to say, gee, get excited about that being a great grade. But they did get it done. And the Medicaid reforms, again, that's going to hurt a lot of lower-income people. But it had to be done. They had to rein the cost of that in. And so those are two important things that were done. And they did not get the pension thing done, Jen, but they did make progress on it. And they're going to come back in a few weeks, the leaders and the governor, maybe yet this week, just to meet among themselves, the leaders, and then they'll bring the legislature back when they work out a deal. They've never been this close to finding a resolution of the pension issue. It's always darkest before the dawn in the legislative process, just when you think everything's falling apart. In fact, the issues are pretty clear. People are in agreement that something has to be done. They came close. And so it's not all bad to back up, make sure they've got it right. And I expect that they'll do something on pensions.
We saw, as this fiscal year ends, and this fiscal year ends at the end of this month, a lot of agencies saying, sorry, we're out of money. We're going to have to move things around. We're going to have to go back to the legislature and ask for more money. When you see across-the-board cuts in the state like this, do you think that there's that assumption that we'll get three-quarters of the way through the year and suddenly the agencies will be asking for more money? Or is there a mindset change when you see numbers this early?
I assume that that will be the case, that there will be some agencies that just simply can't function with what the resources they have. I think you're seeing that with the state park system now, for example. And so that's going to be a choice lawmakers have to make as they go along. There's no good solution. As I said, the state is broke. The state is worse than broke. I mean, it cannot pay its bills on time. It has the worst bond rating, according to one agency, of any state in the country. So those require draconian means. The fact is we've all been profiting from public services that were not being paid for. And the day of reckoning has come.
There were a lot of people talking about looking at this year as an election year, with all the statewide, all of the state legislative offices up for grabs with the new legislative map and the presidential and congressional campaigns, and saying lawmakers aren't going to do anything. They'll push it off until after November. They'll wait until next year. Do you think that was true?
No, I think the exact opposite is true. People are in Illinois are fed up with this, and the lawmakers have a real incentive to be able to go back home and say, we didn't fix it, but we've got it on a path toward resolution, and try to campaign in that fashion. Yes, the individuals who lose their jobs or who lose benefits, they're going to be angry. But the fact of the matter is, Jen, most voters in Illinois, they don't get Medicaid. They don't have kids in school or at the state universities. And yet they see this mess and they don't like it. And so for lawmakers to be able to say, we've taken some steps, we didn't kick the can down the road, we've started to make some solutions, I think politically will sell.
That was quite a lot of what you and other analysts were saying at the beginning of the legislative session, that last year they did a lot of this kicking the can down the road, doing stopgap measures and putting things off until they could really deal with things. The pensions are still hanging out there. Do you feel like that is a bit of a failure? Are people going to look at the legislature and say you failed because you didn't pass that?
No, because they're not done with that yet. Mm-hmm. They pushed that rock up the hill and just couldn't get it over the top. And there is agreement that the state has a problem with pensions. There are agreements in terms of some of the options that for resolution. I think the piece that's missing out of this debate right now is trying to find some additional revenue to put into the pension system. If you tell public workers you're going to have to make you're going to have to live with a lesser pension and you're going to have to make some cuts. The public worker side of this has got a right to say, well, you need to put some more revenue into this. We are in this jam because the state, as the employer, was not fulfilling its obligations to put money aside in the pension system. So the state needs to do that. And there again, there are more tough choices. This state could start imposing an income tax on retirement income, say, of over $50,000. Most school pensions are $34,000, something like that. So lower income retirees wouldn't be hit. You could expand the base of the sales tax in this state, so like it's Indiana's. And a lot of things aren't subject to the sales tax in Illinois. Some of those kind of options need to be looked at as part of this negotiation. And in fact, they were in the Medicaid debate, where the state raised the cigarette tax and said that money's, we're going to put this in the, it didn't all go to Medicaid, it went into the general fund. But the idea is that you come up with some additional revenues. I think that's a piece that is missing out of the pension debate. And when the governor and lawmakers meet, I think they're going to have to do something about that in order to get public employees on board with this.
How important do you think it is that this pension reform, however it comes out, be negotiated as openly and transparently as possible? How much do the unions need to be involved and the general public need to see what's happening in order to have that confidence that it'll work?
Well, in the political process, sure, everybody's for transparency. I think everybody understands the issues. Everybody ought to have an opportunity for some say in the discussion. But at some point, political leaders on something like this have to cut a deal. And everybody has to lose some face. They have to have a way out of a position that they're in that's no longer tenable. And that can get awfully difficult to do, as we saw on the floor of the legislature when Speaker Madigan dumped this bill back on Tom Cross's plate. I think you do have to have an opportunity for people to hash this out. And that's just the way the process works. What's important is for Illinois to have a pension bill that solves this problem, that convinces the bond markets that, yeah, Illinois has got a problem, but it's got a plan in place that will fix the problem by 2045 or 2050 or somewhat down the road. And it has to be credible. And I think if you can do that, it will convince the bond markets and it will convince the business community that this state is getting its fiscal house in order. And those things are essential, Jen, for the economy in this state to grow. Who wants to locate a business in a state with this kind of financial mess?
You mentioned some of the frustration that was apparent on the House floor, especially last week, during that last week of session. Nearly everyone, if they haven't seen it yet, will likely be looking for it, has seen the video of local state representative Mike Lost of Murfreesboro, who was obviously very frustrated with how things were going. A bill was dropped on his desk. He wanted to be able to take time to look at it. They wanted leadership wanted a vote. How much of that was just airing of frustration? How much of it was a political move? What's your take on it?
Well, Representative Bost was mad as heck and wasn't going to take it anymore, right? And we've all had those moments in our lives. And I think it's a radical notion with some that he should be allowed to read the bills before they're passed. I was struck when I saw that, that the members, if you look at that clip, the members around him, they were unimpressed. They've seen Representative Bost do this before. It's Mike. It's our Mike. I mean, I don't know that it hurt him. I don't think it helped him, but it was. It did illustrate just the pressures that people are under in the legislature, and sometimes they people lose their cool a little bit.
I wanted to talk a little bit about winners and losers at the end of this spring session. There was a lot of kind of undercurrent between will the governor get his budget proposal or will Mike Madigan win out and the legislative Democrats, Mike Madigan, John Cullerton, and the others. Who was the winner here, or was there one?
Well, we have to see the outcome of the pension debate and see how that resolves. I think any incumbent benefits when they are able to go back home and say, we solved a problem. If they're to the extent that they're not, then their challengers are going to benefit. So Democrats have to feel pretty good about the progress that they've made here. They are the majority party in the state. They ought to be doing okay in the fall elections because President Obama from this state is at the top of the ticket, and that will provide him a little lift, particularly in the Chicago area for Democrats. So, I think right now, and I think that may be some of the frustration Republicans have, is that, they're running out of attack points. We'll see. It's early. It's too early to say that for sure, Jen, but I think incumbents benefit when problems get resolved.
Sure. You're listening to Morning Conversation on WSIU Radio. Our guest this morning is Paul Simon Public Policy Institute Director David Yepsen. David, in the midst of the last few days of session here in this congressional district, in the 12th congressional district, there was big news last week with the Democratic nominee Brad Harriman announcing that he won't be running for Congress. He's got some health issues that he needs to take care of, and the stress of the campaign, he says, is too much. So now Democrats are looking for someone to take the place of this incumbent, Jerry Costello, who's held the seat for decades. Where do you think that district stands? How important is it for Democrats to find the exact right person?
It's very important. This district was, even before Mr. Harriman dropped out, this district was targeted as one of the real toss-up districts in the country. And so this is bad news for Democrats in the short term. It's a hiccup. They've got to quickly get another candidate in place, and if they can do that, this probably isn't going to make much difference come November. But every day that goes by is a day that the Democrats lose in trying to hold on to this. I assume that, it still remains a targeted seat. National Democratic money that was going to pour into this to help Mr. Harriman ought to be available to the Democratic candidate, whoever he or she may wind up being. And so, the financial resources may be competitive. One of the things that can happen here is the Democrats have a little bit of an advantage, and they know exactly who their opponent is, and they know exactly what the district is, and they can find an opponent who can beat the best Jason Plummer on a number of political metrics. And so they can find somebody with a different kind of experience, with a bigger base, maybe somebody who has a lot of personal wealth and can self-fund. It is a setback, but it's not a fatal one for Democrats, and I still expect this to be a competitive district. That said, I have thought all along, once Jerry Costello got out, that district was drawn for him. And once he got out, there are a lot of, this is one of those regions of the country that is trending Republican, and I think it's a real opportunity for Mr. Plummer and the Republicans to pick up the seat.
We hear over the weekend that at least one person has been approached to run for that seat on the Democratic ticket, and that's the Adjutant General of the Illinois National Guard. His name is William Enyart. What type of benefits do you think it brings to the table that he's got this military experience?
Well, I think having military experience is always important to a political candidate. It shows voters that you have put it on the line for your country and you have served your country. I mean, that's why a lot of people who get elected to office have served in the military. That's a real plus that I think he could bring to the table. And I've not seen him campaign, and I don't know him, but just on paper, that's one element of a pedigree that you're certainly looking for when you're looking for a candidate.
This is not the only congressional district in Illinois which has had to scramble on one side of the ticket or another to find a candidate to run. We saw in the newly drawn 13th, which is north of here, north of I-70, across the central part of the state, that someone had to be picked when Tim Johnson decided he wouldn't run again. Is this a trend that you're seeing nationwide, or is this just a couple of personal decisions, do you think?
No, this is a trend. Serving in Congress is not what it used to be. It is mean-spirited, and it lacks civility. And so people like a Jerry Costello, for example, who a civil, calm guy who go to Washington to serve the public and wind up getting caught up in that you know, a blender, if you will, of partisanship, at some point, they don't want to do it anymore. They can make more money doing something else with their lives. They don't have to live on an airplane shuttling back and forth. And then when they get there, they're in the midst of all this partisanship. If you're a Democrat and you believe in an activist government solving problems and want to spend money, you got no money to spend. If you're a Republican who believes in cutting taxes and reducing the size of government, you don't have any give to cut taxes. And so we're at gridlock, and everyone, the idea of political persuasion anymore in our country is to simply turn up the volume and try to outshout your opponent. And as a result, you have a lot of people who are saying, I'm not going to run, or I'm getting out. And I think we're seeing a lot of that all over the country, and a number of people who are hanging it up.
What's the backlash from that environment? Is there a critical point when voters will say enough and perhaps take a closer look at third parties?
Well, no, I don't think third parties have. Historically, this country is hardwired for a two-party system, and you know, the third party people don't like to hear that, but they do make a contribution in raising issues, but it's very difficult for them to get elected. I hate to say this, but I think it takes a crisis. Throughout American history, you know, we fumble along and let problems fester, and until something blows up, you know, it's hard to develop a public consensus to make change. I mean, I'm thinking of Pearl Harbor, the Great Depression. You know, it takes a crisis, and in a crisis, Americans will come together and they'll work very hard. You see it in the response to tornadoes, for example, the civic "let's pull together" kind of thing. And I think the country needs a little bit of a wake up call. Unfortunately, in this context, I think it's going to mean additional economic calamity and problems for both parties to come together and start agreeing on some solutions, that we do need some additional revenue to solve this deficit, and we do have to cut the size of government. And that's something, that's not a very popular program.
Sure. Over the next several weeks and months, we'll start seeing more and more polling come out, presidential down to congressional, even some state races. I know that your institute is very involved in polling. Do you expect to see any big changes over the next several weeks?
No. I think this presidential race nationally is it a statistical tie. Obama's had a rough few weeks. It doesn't help to have the stock market go down 240 points. So Republicans are seeing a little bit of a lift. You see Romney doing better with women, largely because Republican women are coming home. You know, the country is clearly in a mood to get a new president, but they're not sure they're going to fire Obama until they are convinced that Romney would be a good choice. And that's up to Romney to portray himself and his issues and what he wants to do in such a way the American people will say, yeah, we want him to be our president. The parallel to me is the 1980 election, where Americans were clearly ready to cashier Jimmy Carter, but they weren't sure if this grade B movie actor from California was the guy to do it. And it wasn't only till the very end of the campaign, in mid-October, where Reagan really bested Jimmy Carter in the debate, that Americans then said, yep, Carter's got to go. We need a new president. Reagan won fairly comfortably. I think that's where we are now. People are willing to take a look at an alternative to Obama, and we'll see if Romney can fashion himself that way. It's a toss-up election now.
Do you find that, and we just have a minute or so remaining, but do you find that voters are really wanting the lawmakers, and presidential candidates for that matter, to talk about those issues that they're worried about, those jobs and economy issues, even though they're still talking about abortion and immigration and whether or not the president was born in the United States?
Yeah, and yes, they do. They want issues addressed. They want solutions. They also, though, when it comes to voting for president, also want somebody that they like and that they trust. And this is where Obama has got some a plus. People personally like him. And that's worth a lot when somebody's running for president. But I think Americans want to see somebody they think is going to get this situation under control. And they're tired of this acrimony. And frankly, a lot of Americans are saying a plague on both your houses. They don't think politics works. You're seeing that in low turnouts, particularly among younger Americans, Americans under age 30, students here on this campus. They're just tuning it out. And that's a big loss for Obama.
Sure. That's Paul Simon Public Policy Institute Director David Yepsen. David, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
And we'll, of course, continue to watch those political debates and keep track of those state issues here on WSIU Radio.